We met at a brunch, and we hooked up in the bathroom.
You were, so
It
you were
wasn't
flip.
brunch at a house. It was at brunch at a house.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? This week we have Jeffrey Self, and I am pinching my gay ass self. I've wanted him on the podcast since the podcast was a podcast. I have been a fan of his, I mean, truly since the beginning of my gay time. You know Jeffrey from Search Party. You know him from Jeffrey and Cole Casserole with a brilliant Cole Escola. And he is starring in the movie Spoiler Alert with Jim Parsons coming out. And you need to listen to his new podcast, Breakfast Buffet with Cole Escola. I have to say that this week, of course, has been really shitty, and I want to take a quick second just to send all of our love to the people in Colorado Springs. And really, all that we can do, I think, is be gay as hell, like be our authentic queer selves and be super loud and super proud. And if you are at a Thanksgiving meal this week and at all you feel squashed by any person, I think we gotta go loud and we gotta go fucking proud. I'm really excited that with all the toughness of this week, I got exciting news that Gay Ass Podcast is doing a live show. We have been booked for a show in January. It is January 19th in LA. I'm, of course, going to be posting all the details as soon as tickets are available, but I wanted you to be the first to know that it is happening. January 19th, it's a Thursday in Los Angeles, and I know we're going to sell it out and just have an incredible time with incredible guests. So with that in mind, let's be gay as hell and get into this episode with Jeffrey Self. I ask him about the new podcast with Cole. I ask him about doing a movie with Diane Keaton. It's called Mac and Rita. I ask him about every fucking question I could get in with the hour we had together. Follow the podcast at Gay Ass Podcast. And listen, we're going to be taking a break for a few weeks right at the beginning of December. So there's going to be a few more episodes before the season break. And then we're going to be launching season 3, the third year of this podcast, right around that live show, January 19th. I'm sending you so much love. I'm so grateful that you are here, that you are queer. And I hope you enjoy this app. I'm honestly taking a second to just breathe in this moment because Jeffrey Self, I'm not just saying this. I've been a fan since Jeffrey and Cole Casserole.
Oh.
I've been a fan of every episode of Jeffrey Live. I'm a Search Party girlina. Thank you so much for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Jeffrey Self, pinching my gay ass right now.
Bling. I love it. I'm so flattered and I'm so happy to be here. I'm also happy that you are as old as I am, that you were around when we were making the Jeffrey and Cole
I'm actually
casserole.
Devastated to be as old as you are because you, I literally Googled your age about 3 minutes ago because I was like, he has done so much and it is such a gay trendsetter. You were doing the Vigios, the straight to cams way before any faggotrini was doing that. And you're like 2.5 years older than me, like maybe two.
We were at the beginning of the straight to cam movement, if you will.
Do you feel
me and Cole?
Do you feel
annoyed, bitter, pissed? Yes. To have done it before you could make money off of it, of course.
Your TikTok creator fund would have been buying you a house.
I know. I think about it all the time because, like, I was making videos. I started making videos in like 2007, I think. I first started just doing vlogs about American Idol at the time. I think they're all off the internet now because there was a moment where I was like, we could mute these. We don't necessarily.
Was this like the Fantasia Barrino era, or what were you really fighting?
This would have been whatever. I was obsessed with David Archuleta, who was finally out, and at the time he was not, and probably like 15. So I my obsession. I was also like 17.
I was gonna say I just posted about David Archuleta and all the confusing feelings I had in high school. But hey, can we give him snaps for finally coming out all these decades later?
No, I'm so happy. I was just watching an interview with him. Cameron, I forget his last name, interviewed him on Queerity.
Cameron Sheets, and, we love.
Yeah. He's such a sweetie, and it was such a, I was watched a little bit of the interview, and he was very charming, but David Archuleta is so sweet. I mean, he grew up like so fucking religious. Of course it took him a second.
Of course it did. Can you believe all the Mormons, speaking of all the David Archuleta gayness, now the,
oh my God,
the Book
the
of Mormon
gay marriage
now,
thing today.
I know. So
like full Mitt Romney protecting gay marriage. What in the world? And I was just listening to who was on Marc Maron yesterday. Oh, I was listening to Elizabeth Banks on Marc Maron from a couple days ago. And she, I guess, like casually has a house in Utah because she was like, well, I like to ski. It's like, okay, well, that's how, that's that you also you're crazy rich. But but anyway, she was talking about she was listening to the radio, like a Mormon radio station in her car when all the Roe v. Wade was starting stuff was happening a few weeks back with the Dobbs decision. And she was saying that like the Mormon people were having like a true enlightened debate and like support in some ways of, wow, of being pro-choice. Like wow, everything about it is so confusing that we're now in a place where like, are Mormons going to be evolved more than everybody else? I'm so confused.
Well, here's the thing that I find. They only have the choice of that because they are seeing how many people growing up following the rules are, like, deeply troubled. And I feel like if the trend continues, like, any Mormon person, granted, I don't know a million, but, like, I do, I am friends with a couple people who grew up Mormon and are gay. And just like all of us, they're fucked up, but dare I say a little more.
Yeah, I think a little more, yeah. I mean, anytime you have to wear special underwear, it's really going to fuck with your head.
And then
especially
go on
as a gay man.
Trip to a different country
go on a
with
trip.
A person of the same sex and not jack off with them? Sure.
I mean, the what's that? There's that Mormon porn site. It's really hot.
Oh, yeah. It's like, called. Yeah, yeah. Like
Mormon Boys.
Mormon
or
Boys, yeah.
It's something like that.
I find myself, when I watch a religious trauma porn, it's sometimes I'm really in and sometimes I have to get out because...
I get it.
But if it's a doctor, I'm all in.
Do you... Did you grow up religious?
Jewish, but like not... You know, Judaism is not really mean to the gays, but I feel like my religion I grew up with was like hairless, straight, white jock that made me feel very sad to be hairy, gay Jew.
Totes. Where were you growing up?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Sure. And so then you've got like
Western religion.
I guess because Missouri is Midwest, not Southern.
Exactly.
I'm very confused by what Missouri is.
It can be confused. I do receive questions. I think there are enough cornfields for it to feel Southern and enough homophobia and racism for it to feel Southern. But then you get a lot of let me scoot past you's. There's that.
So you've got that trauma as well. Yeah.
Remind me, where did you grow up?
Georgia.
Oh, my husband's from Atlanta. What part are you from?
I grew up in Rome, Georgia, which is like 2 hours northwest of Atlanta.
And that is the South.
Yeah, it's the South. Like, we're like an hour from the Tennessee border. We're like 40 minutes from the Alabama border. Marjorie Taylor Greene lives there in my hometown.
Oh, you win. Baby, you win. Yeah, but that's why people say, didn't you see that thing going around about like, why are people funny? It's just like trauma. I think that you, would you equate some of your brilliance and humor to trauma?
Yeah, I think so. I think like more, yeah. I mean, yes. And also like I got out of Georgia very young. Like I left basically at 17. Like I came back for like a confused 4 months at one point when I was like 18, but I got the fuck away. And I think that I would not, the trauma is like what lit the fire to like get the hell out of there. You know what I mean?
That's how I felt about, I went to NYU for college and I wanted just to subconsciously, cause I wasn't out yet, go to the gayest possible place that wasn't my upbringing spot.
And you did it. You went to NYU.
And I fucking did it. And then gay by May, which for me was gay 2 months before going to NYU, made out with my first boy within about 2.5 weeks.
Not until college, though.
No, I mean, I was like fully afraid and could not. By the time I come out, it had been a few months before I was supposed to go to college, and there just wasn't. I just didn't know any gay people that were out or down to clown.
Yeah. I wasn't like out or, I mean, I was out-ish in high school to like to peers and stuff, but like not to like my family or anything. And I would find, you know, hookups and stuff on like, do you remember XY.com?
Oh, of course.
Did you ever do XY?
Was XY before D-List?
I think so. I was just having this debate with somebody. I think it was because XY was the one they had like a magazine. It was like geared toward people our age.
Yes.
Like, it was kind of like supposed to be for like gay teens to be able to find each other. But like with that came the creepiness of like, you know, 50-year-old men trying to find gay teens.
But you managed to find people that you hooked up with.
Yeah. And like AOL chat rooms and like. I think Adam for Adam was a big thing then.
Adam for Adam was one of the only online hookups I ever had. I've told this story many times. My parents put the fear of God in me about having any sense of sexual enjoyment at all. Because they told me I would, of course, get HIV and die. But I never had the strength to hook up with anyone. But I definitely did have phone sex via AOL chat rooms with men in their 40s and 50s. And they thought I was legal. Spoiler.
Yeah. Same. I did so much of that. Like, I mean, I also like would hook up with like full adult men, like in real life,
and you
that I would meet on the internet,
16.
And I was like fully 16. I mean,
and I'm not gonna say that you. I am gonna say that you probably looked pretty young at 16, because I
looked very young at 16.
You looked young at 26. You still look young.
That's nice. I was fulfilling something for these. Gentleman, that is troubling to quite think too much about. But yeah, I mean, like getting out of all that and getting away from the South and getting to New York and all that was like, you know, I think about like who I would be if I like had stayed in Rome, Georgia.
Oh, I don't
and
I do think that. Like I don't do that.
Like crystal, I think it would just be like crystal meth and probably dead by now. Like I mean, like I can't imagine a world where it would have gone well.
It's know. Either crystal meth or death, so I feel like the options are
honestly not
on the menu. Not great. Not the menu I'm looking to order from.
A lovely experience. Yeah.
But we made it. We made it to our gay, fully formed selves, and it would be against my gay fagotrini podcast arena religion to not ask you about Breakfast Buffet with you and fucking Cole Escola. I listened to the first episode. It is. So fucking funny, and not only is it written by you two, but the conceit of it is so stunning of you being these morning show hosts. I mean, Larry Shedd and Diane Denise Kitchen. It is so fucking funny, and I think you are, again, ahead of the curve, because I'm going to see now every other gay person do 18-minute episodes of trying to be as funny as you, and they're going to fail, but they might monetize it more.
They will monetize it more because we're both myself and Cole are terrible at that. I really appreciate that you've already listened to it and
that
you enjoyed it. I mean, I'm so excited about it and I'm so proud of it. And, you know, me and Cole, you know, as you know, we worked together. We kind of like got our start together back in like around 2008. And then for about, it was only like 3 or 4 years that we were like working so intensely together because we did all the videos and then we did like this like thing for Logo and then we did all these live shows. And then we both sort of started to get like acting opportunities. And I, at that point, was pretty sick of New York and came out here to LA. And then we kind of just had to not work together anymore because we were in separate places. So anyway, long story short, we've been wanting to work together again and do something. We sold a pilot last year to HBO Max, but then HBO Max merged with everybody else and everything fell apart, which was a bummer. And so then we were like, well, now fucking what? And then this summer we were like, podcast? And originally we were just trying to come up with an idea that we could just like, you know, like people can just like do a podcast and they like show up and they just turn on a mic and then the two of them talk. And then it's like, they make all this money and then they like go and tour the country. And you're like, wait, how are they doing this? This is not fair.
Goals.
So I originally that's what we were trying to come up with. And like, we just like couldn't come up with anything that we could just like, or that wasn't already done, that we could just like ramble about, you know what I mean? And then we kind of started to play around with the idea of this morning show thing, because we used to do these, a version of these characters that we do on the podcast now in a sketch on Jeffrey and Cole Casserole. And it was like our favorite thing we would ever do. And so, yeah, we finally were just like, let's just fucking do it. And we are making it ourselves. We're not like doing it with a network or anybody. And we made 6 of them. Cole came out here in September and stayed with us, or stayed here in this very room.
Wow.
And wow. And we wrote it and came, you know, kind of figured out a bit more what it was.
So you did the breakfast buffet retreat, and then 6 episodes were born, and the rest is herstory.
And yeah. We also did a retreat in Fire Island in July, where we were really trying to, that was when we were trying to come up with the podcast, where we could just sort of like show up and not really have to do much work. And then all the ideas we came up with there, we like a week later talked about them, and we're like, these are terrible ideas. Like, this is not.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you were in Fire Island, so you're too busy getting your holes plugged.
Yeah. I was a little busy with that as well. Let's be real. I spent so much time on Fire Island this summer. I was there a total of 6 weeks. It was spread out. But I was there a total of 6 weeks.
Spread out or not, that is a long time to be in that environment.
I have a friend who has a house there, and so I was only supposed to go for 10 days, but then one other trip got planned before that, and then I got to be there in their house because they were out of town for a week by myself.
That's what
all
you by do. Myself. That's what
and
you
I
do.
Didn't see a soul. I didn't socialize. I got up really early every morning, took the dog to the beach, then hung out by the pool, read all day, and would like make dinner and watch a movie. And then get up and do it all over again. I didn't like, for that week, I didn't like party. I mean, I had a couple boys over at times, but like, I was very well behaved. And then I also had like very, you know, wild party weekends throughout. But
that
it
sounds
was magical.
Like the fucking dream. Honestly, I'm manifesting that for my
yeah,
future.
Yeah, you've been.
I've been, but I haven't done any lengthy stay. I went when my husband and I were living in New York, and I was too young to A, appreciate, B, feel confident enough to be woven into the fabric of it, and C, didn't stay long enough to do enough things. But now that I am where I am right now, I think it would be a much different experience. I do want to let you know something that I love so much about Breakfast Buffet is the audience reactions that you place into it. I would say that the audience reactions are to Breakfast Buffet as New York is to Sex and the City. It's like, it's the third or fourth character. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely agree. You can make things that aren't that funny so much funnier by audience reactions.
I love an audience reaction. I think, and that's what's so beautiful about, I think, podcasting is that when I first had friends make a podcast, truly 12, 13, 14, however many years ago, I was like, this is so fucking stupid. We have the radio for a reason. And then now that it's becoming what it is, it's like, no, Cole and Jeffrey need to have a scripted podcast with audience reaction after audience reaction.
That's very nice. I'm glad we have one. And I like how short it is, but we didn't intend for it to be as short because we just like, that's how it turned out.
Yeah.
And then we were like, oh, we could write more. But it's like, more work? No, thank you.
It's enough for me. I do want to ask you a question about you, because I'm really, I'm trying not to fangirl so much, but I want to ask you like for genuine advice about something. So you and Cole had a pilot that probably had a frustrating, and with all the HBO stuff happening, what did you do to like mourn that? Because I recently revealed, like very recently, I had a huge career upset that happened 4 days ago, and so I'm
4 days ago.
Yeah, like the elevator pitch is that I got a book deal. I wrote the book and was about to promote it next month, and then the publisher laid off almost half of the office because of the economy, and my book is owned by them because they came to me with the concept, and now my book will never see the light of day.
Oh my God.
I found out like on Monday. Thank you. But I, you know, I'm just like, for someone who, you know, I, your career is so exciting and huge, and I aspire to follow in your footsteps. And so like, what, how do you move forward after you have like a gut punch like that?
Oh God. I mean, I've had and continue to have so many gut punches. I mean, that one though is pretty intense because it's so complicated, because them owning it, that's horrible.
Do you give yourself like a certain amount of time to be sad?
Yeah, I mean, I am like a very, I'm very like a depressive, and I'm very susceptible to like real manic depressive periods that are very low. So,
which I think is what every creative person has. If I
yeah,
can say that.
totally. But I mean, it depends on the thing. I definitely got better at it. It's definitely something that I feel like I constantly am working on, like. In therapy, mm-hmm. and just like with friends and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, I've like, you know, been up for like a big life-changing role, quote unquote, before that came down to the final moment, and then I didn't get it. And then, you know, for like 3 weeks, wasn't getting out of bed, you yeah. know? And I will say that I think I've gotten to a better point of like, one thing my therapist always talks about is like setting that timer kind of thing that yeah. you just sort of suggested of like, okay, well, we can do this for a day or a week mm-hmm. or an hour or whatever your limit is, and wallow. But then like, does it mean that like at the end of that, you have to like go back to life as normal and like on to the next thing? But like, do that, and then, you know, read a book that's going to be, you know, that's actually good for you. Yeah. Or, you know, like the next thing you do doesn't have to be the next giant, amazing thing that's going to change everything and turn it all around. But
it's
the next thing you do,
should
just be something that makes you feel a little better, you know? And then slowly get back into it, you know?
Right.
But the reality is that, like, that's fucking shitty. Mm-hmm. And, like, you're allowed to, like, mourn that and be depressed and angry and all those things. But also know that you've been angry and depressed and hurt by something that happened before. And that went away. And like, I mean, it's so trite to say that, but like,
well, that's what my therapist I had for many years said, that what I really used to feel that I've worked on is that the emotions last forever. And it turns out they are very temporary, but it's so hard to feel that in the moment, because of course, my fear is that I will never accomplish anything else.
Anything again. Yeah.
You know,
of course. And you've got those voices in your head that are telling you that that's true. And like, you know, if you're like me, it's like, you know, for a long time, those were the voices you listened to and that guided you. Mm. And that doesn't, I mean, you can get better at recognizing those voices as bullshit, but they don't go away. And
like, it's also recognizing which survival tactics were only serving us at a time, like when we were either closet or when we were in Georgia or St. Louis or wherever it is. And now gauging in your 30s, what actually serves you.
I have a big issue with like jealousy and comparing myself to other people. Like that's mm-hmm. like that is like truly probably my biggest issue I have. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes though from, again, it's like, that's one of those things where it's like you just said, recognizing the survival techniques and, you know, when that particular survival technique was helpful and not helpful. And I think, you know, for me, like when I'm super jealous, like I think it definitely comes back to the like growing up gay, where you're like, well, I'm the only gay, right. You know? And so like when other gay people are like selling TV shows or starring in movies and you're not, and you want to be, it's like, well, there's only room for one. And it's exactly. like, actually there's so much room for everybody, but it's so fucking hard to like actually process that, because sometimes you just want to be pissed off that the thing you worked really hard for isn't happening. And it's like, well, what the fuck? Why not? And it sucks. I mean, is there any wiggle room in trying to get your work back from them or no?
There's not. I talked to them about it. And the only silver lining is that this was an idea that they approached me and I thought it was a scam and it turns out it wasn't. And so I sent them writing sample. I got the job. I was thrilled. Right. It's hilarious, the timing of it. I had just had all these photos taken because I was about to start promoting it. And I told the photographer, I was like, and this is for my new book. She was like, okay, well, make sure you give me credit. I'm very excited for you. And I was like, of course, girlina. I can't wait to see your name in this book. And then the day after, I got the email that, hey, we've laid off all these people and blah, blah, blah. So I had a phone call with them and, you know, there is a chance they can re-release it in the future but they don't want to promise me that. So that's why they're saying that it's canceled. But the silver lining is that I actually have been working on a second book that is my idea. I'm going to work on, you know, sending it to lit agents since I don't have one. And I would love to get a gorgeous big publishing deal. And even if I don't, which I think it should, I will self-publish it because it's that good of an idea. And I'm just going to, you know, ride that wave of optimism because it's on. Otherwise, I'll be a meth head in Georgia.
Of course. What is the new idea? Fiction or nonfiction?
Nonfiction.
Great. Love it.
So stay tuned. I do, though, I have to say, like, all of these conversations are making me beg to ask you this question because we're talking about when we are in our closet spaces, when we are growing up. I need to ask you the famous podcast question, Jeffrey Self.
What?
Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Who do we blame? I mean, I think there's a handful of folk. I mean, Shelley Duvall comes to mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very into that world, that fairy tale theater, that I don't know if you remember the movie she did, Rock and Rhyme, but look it up. It's a fucking trip. But that was all very formative and very queer and very odd. I would say the community theater production of Annie and the woman that played Mrs. Hannigan. From that, every other version of Miss Hannigan. I mean, I think Miss Hannigan, and then because then you watch the Carol Burnett movie, and then you watch, you know, then you listen to the album, you listen to Dorothy Loud. And I was, I was obsessed with performing that as a very young child. And I would say that was probably the true beginning of like, oh, this kid is gory, you know?
I'm so happy that you had a community theater outlet because
Did you not?
See, I didn't have the strength to... Actually, that's not true. I take it back. I fucking did. When I was in, I wasn't super, super young. I auditioned for the St. Louis Muni. They did like the kid choruses. And I was like, I had this much talent, zero. I was 8 years old and horrible. But I was like, I want to be on stage. Like I was shy at the time. I was just like, but I knew I wanted to be a gay person in a spotlight. And so I auditioned for the Muni kids and probably forgot the words, said horribly, and I didn't get cast. And I looked at my mailbox every day for months to see if I was going to get that letter and it never came. I auditioned years later and did it in high school. But, you know, I did like an eighth grade, a theater class with all girls except for me, a summer thing. They showed us the Wicked, this was like eighth or ninth grade. They showed us Wicked performing at the Tony Awards and that was big. But you were doing community theater. Was Miss Hannigan just a gay? Like, was the woman playing Miss Hannigan just like a gay fruit fly?
Yeah. So she also was the music and drama teacher at my elementary and middle school.
Huge.
And so she was like the grand dame of the community theater as well. But not only was she that, she was our fucking teacher every day. And she was obsessed with me, obviously. and I was like the number one favorite. And she played like Peter Pan. She played and like the community theater, like had flying for the first time. She was like 8-0 Annie. I saw her do.
So this woman played roles from age ranges of about 50 years.
Yep, correct. But she was like the star of the community theater. Like if you had her as the lead, you were like, oh, it's a good show. Like this is gonna be a good
show. Can you say her name? I picture a really
I don't want to
say
her name because it is a good name, but I don't want to say her name because now we haven't been in touch for a very long time since like I probably haven't communicated with her since I guess like when I was on Facebook, maybe, which was like 8 years ago. Uh-huh. But I sometimes, like, when I'm at home, I'll like use my mom's Instagram or use her Facebook and like go look her up. And she's a Trump supporter.
Fuck, I knew you were going to say that.
And it's like a bummer. It's such a bummer.
No, yeah. The woman that flew as Peter Pan in Georgia is now supporting the man that.
I know. And so she was everything. I mean, she is 100% why I got into like theater and music and all the stuff that like I was obsessed with growing up as a kid.
Was there a show that you did during this period, either like middle school, high school, that you felt like you were a fucking star doing theater in Georgia?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Artful Dodger and Oliver.
Huge.
I mean, huge. Designed my own costume. And then when I was like in, a freshman in high school, the community theater children's production was like some horrible musical version of Sleeping Beauty. And I played the witch and they let me do it in like full drag.
Before Billy Porter.
Before Billy Porter. And I was like so impressed with myself. And I do, in like when I think back on it, I'm like, I feel like that was probably really good.
I feel like it was probably
the most uninhibited performance I've probably ever given. Like I think like I was tapping into something then that it was like kind of in the middle of puberty, but it was before so much of the post-pubescent shame comes in.
Jeffrey, that you are proving that all kids are gay, but the gay kids, the actual gay kids, are so beautifully expressive because they don't realize yet that they're not supposed to be. And
that's exactly right.
And that is what a gorgeous synergy that you got to play the witch in drag eleganza. And you are correct. You were incredible. I don't have to see footage.
Yeah.
You were incredible. And the fact that you also like had a Shelley Duvall point of reference where you couldn't help being who you were. And thank fucking God that you followed that.
I'm glad I followed that too. I mean, I think back on that, like when I did that production, is like truly probably the most confident I ever felt. Like, and like, I don't think I think I've chased that ever since. Like, sure. I don't, when I think back on like the curtain call of that and being like, and like in retrospect, probably like half the audience being like creeped out by this like 14-year-old boy in full drag, not thinking about it. And just
all
like
you were doing was thinking about the applause that you were hearing
as your wig
dragged on the floor.
Exactly.
Well, I need to say that it led you to some stunning projects, one of which is, I mean, first of all, I'm going to ask you about a few things because I need to, it's in my contract. Is that you did Mac and Rita with Diane Keaton. The fact that you were able to share a screen with Diane Keaton is every gay man's dream, and I want to wish you a hearty congratulations.
Thank you. I am have been a huge Diane Keaton fan forever. I made a video YouTube documentary with my friend a few, like, how many years ago? Probably like 7 years ago, where I went to Las Vegas, Nevada, to a liquor store off the freeway where Diane Keaton was signing bottles of her wine. She released because she had had a red wine and then she was releasing a white wine. And so we drove there and like filmed it and made like a little 10-minute thing out of it.
Be honest, how was the wine?
You know, the red was better than the white. The red was, they were both like just table wines, but the red was, I mean, neither were great, but the red was better. The white was very Chardonnay-y.
Sure.
I'm going to cough real quick. I've been so sick. I had the flu last week.
Oh, God.
It sucked. I got it in Palm Springs. So it's like a very homosexual flu, but not that one. So I had driven there. I'd done the thing. I had like, you know, I had a picture of her framed in my house, you know, and then a friend of mine who directed Mac and Rita, out of the blue, me and Augie, my husband, were in the airport in New Zealand, where we had been for a few months, coming back to the States. And we, I'm like checking my email in line at like the airline. And no, I'm checking Instagram. And Katie, my friend who directed the movie, Katie Asselton, had DM'd me and was like, hey, this is random. Would you be into doing a scene in this movie I'm directing? It's just one scene. It's at toward the end of the movie. You have a couple funny things to do. And more importantly, it's just you and Diane Keaton. And I was like, it felt like a prank. Like I truly.
You fell to your knees in customs. Everyone thought you were having a medical emergency.
What is happening? And then we did. So then I'm like, we're flying back. Like to be shot in like a month. And so we fly back. We've left my dog with my family in Georgia while we've been in New Zealand because you can't come to New Zealand. And so we have to go there. And then this is like pre-vaccine. So this is like when things are starting to shoot again, but like, you know, it's very like touch and go. And so we then, I don't want to fly back to LA because I'm worried about getting COVID on the plane and not being able to film the day with Diane Keaton. So we drive cross country all the way back to, from Georgia to LA because I'm like, and I'm like refusing to go in gas stations or anything because I'm like, I'm not fucking this up. I'm not going to show up to set with Diane
Keaton. You make Augie put on a gas mask every time. 100%.
I'm like, literally when we got back and I was like, we're not leaving the house for 4 days. Like we are not going anywhere. I'm not going to fucking fuck with this possibility. And then I did it and we had this amazing day and I got to film with Diane Keaton on the fucking beach in Santa Monica. And then she was, you know, everything you wanted her to be. And then like a few months later, Katie wrote me and was like, you didn't tell me that you've done this whole video about your obsession with Diane Keaton and going to the wine store and all this stuff. She didn't even know about it. She just randomly had the idea of me playing this part. And then I was worried. I was like, oh, did that creep them out? Like, are they going to cut my scene? Because they're like, oh my God, we allowed her to be in a scene with like a creepy stalker. But they didn't. But I didn't get, I was going to get to go to the premiere, but then I was in Canada filming something else and I didn't get to. But I wondered if they would have told Diane Keaton that I was like the guy who made the video or
the wine guy,
or if it would even matter. But anyway,
well, the biggest gag would have been that you never got COVID, you did the movie, and then they cut you because you're too big of a fan of hers. That would have been the gag.
That would have been truly traumatic.
Just as bad as me canceling my book would be you. Getting caught as a Diane Keaton face wearer.
Oh, I would have been truly devastated.
Well, I did come up with a new segment for this podcast inspired by Jeffrey Self, and it's called Gay Men in Black. I'm going to give you an option of six Diane Keaton movies, and you have to choose which one that you would be allowed to remember. All the other ones will be wiped from your memory, a la Men in Black. I'm going to name off the Diane Keaton films. You tell me, Jeffrey Self, which is the one you keep in your memory banks. The options are The First Wives Club, Annie Hall, Something's Gotta Give, Book Club, and The Family Stone. Again, The First Wives Club, Something's Gotta Give, Annie Hall, Book Club, and The Family Stone. Jeffrey,
it's immediately narrowed down to two.
Which ones?
So it's between First Wives Club and Annie Hall. Now, obviously, Annie Hall, it's problematic because we, you know, Woody, I happen to be a huge Woody Allen fan of the movies, not of the life.
What if you were only a fan of his life and you hated his films?
Haven't seen the movies, but I love how the guy carries himself.
Really interesting story.
I guess for that reason, I would go with First Wives Club. And also, with First Wives Club, you get Bette and Goldie and Stockard while you're at it.
And Stockard at the beginning, and you get a white pantsuit sung to You Don't Own Me.
Totally. And I have a Goldie tattoo back here.
Stop.
I guess that, yeah, we got to go with First Wife.
I think it's a great answer. That is one of the movies that
made me...
What would
be yours?
I mean, okay, well, it, for me, my two shows that my taste is not as heightened as yours. My two are First Wives Club or The Family Stone, because I think The Family Stone is a Christmas film that...
It is a wonderful Christmas film.
It's underrated, and it, like, I think as a Jew, I like it because there's trauma in it. Like, maybe I needed a little bit of a realness, which is just a devastating family plot. But The Family Stone has done a lot for me, and my husband and I actually fight about it a little bit because I don't think he's even seen it, but the fact that...
Okay, well, that's crazy.
It's crazy. I think he refuses to because he's heard... His family is so Christmassy that they're like, you know, they need to watch all of classics and the very happy ones, but I'm like, when can we see Sarah Jessica Parker be an absolute bitch? When can we see Rachel McAdams face off with SJP and then Diane Keaton having a tour de force with a gay deaf son
and cancer?
And cancer, sign me up.
I love that movie. I'm a huge Christmas fan, like huge Christmas fan. In fact, I have a fake Christmas tree over here that I bought that I just got delivered 2 days ago because I was like, let's go ahead. Let's do the Christmas decorations. Put it up last night. Didn't like it. So I took it back down. And
are you going to get a new tree?
I'm sending it back. I have a new one being delivered this afternoon. I didn't like it. I'm very into Christmas, and normally we would get a real tree. Well, I've gone back and forth between fake trees and real trees over the years, but we're not going to be here for Christmas this year. So it's like a little silly, but so I'm getting just like I'm getting a silver tinsel tree, which I've had before. And I love.
Beautiful.
I got this one over here is white, and I thought it would be similar to the same aesthetic as the silver, but it's not. It just isn't attractive.
It's a little more sanitized. I think our relationship to Christmas is that I've always had to be super supportive because it is a big part of Matt's identity, and I am. But in New York, he would force me to carry a huge real tree from Home Depot a mile and a half to our apartment in Queens because we didn't. We one time did get in the back of a scary man's van, and we thought it was the end. But in LA, he has allowed us to get a fake tree that he has already purchased, and it's tall and slender, and it's gonna look gorgeous. By the way, if I may give a really shameless plug, we throw a very gorgeous holiday party here at our apartment every year, and if you happen to be in town, I am gonna be sending you the details, and
Please do. You must
show up.
I love that that's a plug, like you're plugging your party.
If I may plug my social gathering.
That's funny.
I do think, though, that your choice of the First Wives Club is very, very strong. And that does lead me to the next famous podcast question, which is, Jeffrey Self, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Living or dead?
Living or dead?
Well, it's technically, I mean, it's like, is she a leading actress or is she a character actress? What is she? But because I think she deserves the fucking world and they won't give it to her, they'll give her a little bit of the world, but not the whole damn thing, which she does deserve. And so I would want to save her so that she has more time to receive the world would be Glenn Close. Would be Glenn Close. What about you?
My latest controversial answer is Alana Ubok, because she has done so much for me.
Alana Ubok.
On the fucking wall.
Right there in the clock. Have you seen that movie?
Yes, I've seen this movie. Oh my God.
It's such a good movie. That's John Early's favorite movie. And I like this movie, but I'm not like obsessed with this movie. And in my apartment before I moved into this house, in Echo Park, I had my downstairs neighbor was this like total, I think like a straight up meth dealer. And he would like knock on her door, like completely tweaked out of his mind out of nowhere all the time. And literally at like 1 a.m. one night, I'm like watching TV, knock on my door. I open the door. He's like methed out. And I was like, hi, what's going on? He was like, I thought you guys might want this. And he was holding this framed Clock Watchers poster. And I was like, I will take that, but please leave.
As you slowly close the door on his tweaked out face.
So I have that from my former methed out neighbor.
Well, I do love LA. A good poster story, which is so LA. My poster story that is somewhat related is, speaking of Diane Keaton, Matt and I went to a event for book club when they were promoting book club. And they were asking for,
what would you say is the book that you would like to read with your best friends? Tweet it at this hashtag. And I think I made a Real Housewives joke
and a quippy tweet, and I won the contest, and they gave me a swag bag that had it was a gigantic, almost like beach bag that you could put over your shoulder that said book club in huge letters. It came with a little wine cup. It came with a gigantic book club poster, and that was proudly in my bedroom in New York. And people would always be like, why do you have... I enjoyed book club a lot, okay?
I loved. I went to the premiere of book club,
I knew you would fucking want
brag,
to
brag.
Talk not, about compare to spare.
I wasn't invited. A friend of mine knew I would need to be there and brought
me. That helps me.
So I saw that, and then I saw it literally, I think, two more times in theaters because I kept taking people. And then, I'm not joking, every time I'm on a plane, almost, I watch that movie. I have like three movies I always watch on planes. Book Club, almost always watch. If I don't watch Book Club, it's the other one. Let Them All Talk, that Meryl, Diane Wiest, and Candice Bergen movie where they're on a boat. Have you seen that?
I've never seen it. I'm so disappointed.
It's a masterpiece. I'll send you the info. Nice. It's wonderful. It came out during the pandemic. Steven Soderbergh directed it. It's super weird. The tone is very strange, but it's wonderful. I watch it all the time. And then the other one that I often watch on planes, but it's hard to find on planes these days, is The Meddler with Susan Sarandon and Rose Byrne.
I love that you're finding the nichiest gay Sarandon films on Delta.
She lives, Susan Sarandon's character is like a mom who comes to visit her daughter, and she lives at the Grove. Like, she literally lives at the Grove. They claim she lives at the Grove as if the Grove is like the Americana where you can live upstairs, which we all know is not the case. So I think she lives at like Park La Brea behind the Grove, but she like goes to the Grove every day. It's a great movie. I recommend it.
A dear friend of mine lives in that very spot.
La Brea?
Yes, and I think we're going to smoke weed and watch that literally where that movie takes place.
Oh, you must. Oh, you must. Also, Susan Sarandon, fully plain Jewish and from New Jersey.
Okay.
And it's like, what? And she's great because Susan Sarandon's always great, but it's definitely like probably... I can't imagine she was like the first idea when they wrote the movie. Like,
who? I mean, obviously it wasn't a Jewish actor because they don't do that, but what Jewish actor... actress would have been the first choice?
Well, like, Bette's Jewish, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I would have imagined that they would have maybe offered it to Bette.
It went Bette, then it went to Whoopi Goldberg, and then it went to Susan Sarandon.
Which Whoopi is Jewish, right?
I've looked it up so many times. I think she like doesn't do organized religion, but did change her last name Goldberg because of that, and does probably enjoy some of the ideas of Judaism. And for that, I'll say she's Jewish because I would love to claim her as one of us.
Sure. I mean, I feel like she's hosted a Shabbat.
A black Shabbat, maybe, as they did on Real Housewives of New York. There's two more things I want to make sure I ask you about. One is you and your husband, Augie, are so gorgeous. Can you tell me how you met him?
We met, it's not that, well, it kind of is interesting. We met at a brunch and we hooked up in the bathroom. And then we went home together, and we've been together ever since. It wasn't brunch at a house. It was at brunch at a house, not at a restaurant.
Enjoying the brunch, and then obviously the eyes are going across the table. Your banter is terrific. You know, you think each other is hot. Who goes to the bathroom first?
I told him, I was like, I mean, it gets grosser than, it gets more involved than that I'm not going to go into, but I basically was like, go in the bathroom, and we're going to hook up. And
so hot.
We did. Then I took him back. I was house sitting nearby at where we were, and took him back. and we had a lovely hookup. We watched Showgirls. He'd never seen Showgirls. And then we went on a hike the next day. Oh. And then about, I'd say, 2 months later, he moved in with me.
Wow. Okay.
But it was like the 2 months later moving in was like, we both were broke, and it was just like,
circumstantial.
It's gonna be cheaper.
Yeah. You also, I feel like when you watch Showgirls with someone for the first time, it kind of adds on like 6 months.
It bonds. It definitely bonds.
No, I did that with Matt. I had never seen it, and he showed me, and we got married probably a week later. I also need to bring up that you are in a movie that is very high up on my list. It is called Spoiler Alert. I just
so excited.
Cannot wait.
I haven't seen it yet. I know so many people who've seen it, and I haven't gotten to
go. Well, haven't you seen all the fucking brilliant marketing they're doing with all the tissues? It's so smart.
I have, yes. And I've seen some bits of it. Like, I had to go in and do like ADR and shit, but like I have not seen the whole movie, but like they did like a screening the other night, and all these friends of mine that were like went, and I was like, I didn't get to go to that. I want to see it, but I'm going to go to the premiere.
Yes, you are. And for anyone who for some reason hasn't seen the very good trailer yet, it's with Jim Parsons. It's Bill Irwin. It is Sally fucking Field. It's Ben Aldridge.
Michael Showalter directed it.
You know what it is? It really proves your point, like we were saying before, about when you are watching gay stories, queer stories, and you're like, fuck, I wish I could have been a part of this. Not going to be anything else. I had a few people, and like they were trying to be nice, but they're like, wait, you didn't even get an audition for Bros? And I was like, no. Like, it was like, I know I don't feel good about
thanks for rubbing it in.
Yeah, no, I fucking didn't. But totally. The fact that we're seeing these stories and these movies, and like, thank fucking God Jeffrey Self was in it. Was it something that you auditioned for? Like, what was the story booking?
I was obsessed with the book when it came out. And then when I saw they were making it in a movie, like, my first thought was like being pissed off that I wasn't in it. Like, it hadn't been cast. It just was like, they're going to make this into a movie. And I was like, well, fuck them. And then...
I don't even want to be in it.
That's often how it goes for me. And then I actually didn't have to audition. It was because someone else was playing the part, and they dropped out pretty last minute. And I'd worked with Michael Showalter on Search Party. And I didn't really know anybody else, I guess. And then... I think I would imagine I was the Susan Sarandon choice in The Meddler. Like, I was probably like five people down the line, but I'll take it.
However it happened, we do not ask, we do receive.
Exactly.
This is
and it was
so
thrilling.
I just can't imagine. I'm going to be fucking there opening in December. I actually have, if I'm being honest, I haven't read the book, but the story, the trailer, it looks so great. And I cannot wait to message you how much I loved it.
Yeah. It's like I think it's going to be like a Terms of Endearment Steel Magnolias Z movie that people like watch over and over anytime you want to have a good cry. It's like that kind of vibe.
Is something, obviously I'm right now in that place. So I can't wait to extend this depression until next month. Jeffrey Self, I am so sad that I have to end this interview, but before I say goodbye to you, I need to ask you the question I did not prep you on, which is, Jeffrey Self, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
There's so many. I mean, Whoopi besides Diane is one of my number ones, Whoopi and Diane and Rosie O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard for me because Rosie and Whoopi no longer get along. I would say Whoopi's best film. I mean, her performance in Color Purple is like, she's really tapping into something acting wise that is like so raw that no one else can do. Mm-hmm. But then I love her in a comedy, but I mean, I don't think it gets... It's such an obvious answer, but I don't think it gets any better than Sister Act or Sister Act 2. Like, I think it's just really like,
I was hoping you would
gets.
Go there, and you did, and you gave me a gift upon gift upon gifts.
I love her. I love her very much.
Jeffrey Self, thank you so much for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Can you tell us where the people can follow you or what you want them to look out for the most?
People can follow me on Instagram at Jeffrey Self. I'm no longer on Twitter or Facebook or any of that other stuff.
And that's on self-care.
That's self-care,
listen,
folks.
Everyone, A Breakfast Buffet is out.
Oh, I listen to Breakfast Buffet.
Cola
Scola
and Jeffrey Self. You need to listen to wherever you listen to podcasts. Every fucking Tuesday it's coming out. And Jeffrey, you're everything and more, and thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for being so nice and send me the info about your party. And I'm sorry about your book stuff, but it's gonna work out.
Thank you.
It's gonna work out.
I can't wait to tell you that it worked out. Oh, thank you for saying that. Bless. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of That's a Gay Ass Podcast. We have a couple episodes left until season 2 ends, and then kicking off season 3 with that live show January 19th. If you haven't left a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or click subscribe, do that now. We got some amazing guests for the last couple episodes, and it would just be something to add more gayness to this world. I'm sending you all the love. Take care of yourselves. Happy Thanksgiving if you celebrate, and I'll see you next week.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.